Brevity codes are designed to convey complex information with a few words or codes. Think of it as a short hack to key information. On this podcast, it's about sharing insights, success stories, and personal journeys across a broad spectrum of disciplines. Welcome to the Brevity Code. Hey everyone, what's up? Welcome to another episode of Brevity Code. Today I am joined by my buddy, Adam Patali from Adam's Polishes and Enzo's Hand Wash. And we're going to get into what Enzo's is all about after we retrace the roots from his fantastic story and journey with the foundations of Adam's Polishes. So welcome today, Adam. What's going on, my brother?
Thank you, buddy. It's an honor to be here.
Dude, this is going to be rad. So jumping right in, you have a great entrepreneurial journey, like literally stemming from, I feel like, the time you were fairly young and in the formative years. And it served you well in your passion for, well, I know you have like a car collection, but I feel like that's putting things in reverse because the polishes and the effort came, then the nice cars way later.
Way later.
So can you maybe just kick us off with the foundation and the roots of your beginnings?
Yeah. It's funny looking back, all these different little doors that opened, it seems like so clear that everything was like God kicking a door open and like, hey, here's a little redirect for you. It's going to sting, but here you go. So I tell the story today with such a different lens because now it's all in, you know, retrospect, right? Now you can see what happened and how it went and when it was a struggle. But I grew up in Southern California, you know, kind of a car culture place with year-round good weather. So for one, I started in a place that was very, sympathetic to car washing and cleaning cars and things like that. But when I was a kid, I was really into bicycles. And in fact, I'm still into bicycles. I've got a pretty cool bicycle collection.
Like what kind? Like BMX, Schwinn Cruiser style? Like where do you land there?
Started off with a Stingray. I think it was a 1977 Schwinn Stingray. And then moved up to other types of bikes. But really, I enjoy making bikes cool. Like I used to get aluminum wheels, and I'd send them down to my buddy's bike shop, and we'd change out the color of spokes and have a different spoke, you know, black gold, and then different color nipple on each wheel so that the wheels are just amazing. And I always made a little bit of money because I had early on, I had a paper route, and then I started a bicycle repair and cleaning business. And so I always could trick out, you know, money in the sense of a 10 or 9-year-old is, you don't need a ton of money, right? You don't have rent. You don't pay gas. You don't have a car. So
that's
your,
cool.
Your money could go.
I didn't even
long.
Realize it went that far back, right? Like you said, you're looking back with this lens, you really start to say, wow, okay, my trajectory actually started.
Yeah.
Way back. Yeah.
So my parents got, you know, separated and then divorced when I was about 10. And my mom started dating a guy who was a cyclist, and he had done a bike ride, a 100-mile bike ride. And the ride was done in the rain. I think it was in Solvang.
I've done that one.
You've done that?
I've literally done that.
Solvang Century.
Yes.
That's so funny.
Yes.
So you know it.
Yes.
And it rains there. You know, that's a beautiful green part of the planet for a reason. It rains, and it rained that year.
Matter of fact, I had a horrible year. Like 35 degrees, blowing sideways. Not very many people showed up at the start line.
Yeah.
My buddy and I were determined. Anyway, yes, I'm a big cyclist. We've never talked about that. But
no kidding.
Yeah, I'm super into it.
Well, that's cool. Well, bottom line, so this guy, his name is Mike Garst. And when my parents got divorced, my mom went to go to get a job because she was a stay-at-home mom. And I have a younger sister and younger brother. So the three of us, she had to support a household. My dad had just started a new business. So there was no money in the house at all. We were broke. So my mom gets a job at Allergan Pharmaceuticals as a receptionist. And, you know, she's single, she's pretty, and she ends up dating one of the doctors there, one of the doctors, Mike Garst, Dr. Garst, and he was a cyclist. And he left his bike at our house in the garage after this ride, and it was filthy. I mean, you can imagine a bike after a dirty 100-mile ride. It was just a filthy bike.
Yeah.
I think he'd laid it down at one point and scuffed all of the handlebar tape on one side. He had blue tape. Remember that? And the back then, the toe clips were held with leather straps.
Yeah, sure.
So the leather straps, once they're wet and they dry again, they're like unusable. They just, like, they turn into a hard.
It's like crusty.
They're crusty. Yeah, they're really nasty. So I had a relationship with the local bike shop. It was called South County Cyclery because I always went there to get my stuff, you know, because I just love bikes and I could ride my bike to Jim Kerwood, who still has this shop today, which is funny. Now it's called Buy My Bikes, by the way, in San Juan Capistrano. He would let me go in and get this stuff. And a lot of times I'd go in there and I'd ask him for a set of new toe straps, or I need some handlebar tape, or I need, you know, okay, can you help me respoke my wheels? Cause I want them, you know, gold and black and gold and black and gold and black. I want every other spoke a different color, whatever. And he'd say, sure, man, why don't you build me that there? He was a Fuji bike dealer.
Sure.
So he would let me assemble a new Fuji out of the box, get it all set up. And then one of the other master techs would totally tune it.
Sure.
But I'd get, you know, the stem in, pedals on, brakes on, you know, just get it basically all set up. And then little by little, of course, I got better. And he couldn't pay me because I was 10. So he would just let me trade for, hey, you need that roll of handlebar tape? And you need that, you need those pedals? We'll see those two boxes. Why don't you go ahead and put those together for me? And we'll call it good. And I was like, cool, man. That's cool.
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah, it was cool. So he's a full, you know, hippie dude and just this, yeah, bro. Very SoCal.
Yeah.
So he left that bike at my house at our garage. And by the time he came back, I had cleaned it and I rewrapped the bars and I replaced the leather toe straps.
Without his prompting.
Well, yeah.
He didn't ask.
No.
You just saw it there. And
it wasn't there. You know, and there wasn't cell phones or anything.
Yeah, no. No.
Pick up the phone and dial his number or something. I just did it. And I really kind of wanted him to stick around because my mom cried like all the time. She was bummed. She was very sad about this whole divorce and she didn't want that. So kind of wanted him to stick around. Anyway, so I just said, yeah, I mean, he's not going to be mad. You know, I know how to clean a bike. I clean mine all the time. I can tell you exactly how to polish out. And then these older bikes, his bike, I forget what kind of bike it was. It's an Italian bike, but it had all Campagnolo.
Maybe like a Bianchi or something. I don't know. Yeah.
Something like that. It might have even been an Italian bike. It might have been a Pinarello or something like that. But Colonago maybe. But bottom line, the aluminum was a little bit tarnished. It got a little bit just scuffy looking. And even after cleaning it, so we used a little bit of this, you know, aggressive metal polish that I, you know, I had it in the garage. Maybe my dad had it or something. And so I polished the bike out. Anyway, he goes back to his work, and he is a member of a 130 or 140 person bike club. So Allergan Pharmaceutical has its own cycling club, and they all ride together, whatever, once a week, twice a week, once a year, whatever they do. And so he goes back, and he sees his bike, and he's like, wow, that's crazy. Like, I can't believe this. This kid's like this total, you know, Mensa for manual labor, right?
Yeah.
not smart, just really good at cleaning stuff. And so he goes and tells everyone. And my mom has a Volvo wagon. And now she's bringing home one or two or three bikes from work every week. And then I get this little advertisement that she put together. And she put it on all the pegboards in the lunchrooms throughout Allergan. So that little business grew and it became a cool thing to do. And I could do it kind of after school and on weekends. And, you know, we were able to put two or three bikes in the Volvo on the way to thing. And I built a rack on the roof. It was a little piece of wood with a little skewer that just, you know, little quick release. So we could put that on there and, you know, created these little mounts and it just got good.
I mean, but you have to realize, like, already the work ethic that's forming and the attention to detail that's forming, and you're what? How old are you? 10 to 12?
Yeah. No, yeah, 10. I think by, it only lasted for about a year. And because then.
But kids were not doing that, right? They were playing Legos. Of course, there was no phones to be distracted with.
Yeah. TV.
Now, so
TV was big.
TV.
Yeah, because back then, I think TV was good. Maybe then there's Dukes of Hazzard and maybe shows.
Oh, yeah, some pretty good stuff.
Shows were good. Yeah. You know, when we were kids. Now, I didn't watch television. I still don't. I don't like television. But I just remember thinking those kids who watch TV all day after school that come in and talk about a TV show that they'd watch, I thought, man, those kids must be really rich because they don't have to do anything after school. They just go home. And anyway, I was not rich. You know, we were definitely not rich. And my dad moved into this really kind of pretty crappy apartment after my parents got divorced. And we were living in on the wrong side of the tracks. And you know, we were some of the only English speaking families on this side of the deal where, you know, we're so close to Mexico you know, it was just a rough neighborhood and a lot of people who were just trying to get by were living there. So I was surrounded by that. And what changed was that, I ended up washing, my dad's car out in the driveway and I washed it pretty regularly. And my dad had to come out and dry the roof because, you know, I couldn't reach it. And my next door neighbor is 1981. And we know that because we sold the house later that year and moved into smaller, you know, kind of crappier houses. But he got a brand new yellow SR5 Toyota pickup, brown stripes.
Yes.
And I'll never forget it. But he goes, hey, Adam, come on over here. An older gentleman, same haircut as you. He was like, would you like to wash my truck? And I was like, oh my gosh, would I like to wash your truck? Yes, I would love to wash your truck. It'd be a miracle. And he opens the door and he goes, would you like to sit inside? And I was like, yes. And I just smelled that new vinyl, you know, that truck had brown vinyl seats. It was just so beautiful. Anyway, started washing his car. And then his wife had a Toyota Cressida, I think. Or something, a Toyota, it wasn't an Avalon before that. Anyway, so I started washing her car, the next door neighbor's cars, and my dad would come out and help me dry the roof until we figured out a little stool that I could stand on and do it. But my dad's like, hey, listen, I'll dry as many roofs as you want as long as you, you know, just keep my car square. And I'm like, done deal, Dad. You got it. So my world switched a lot from bicycle repair and cleaning. That sort of went down as car washing and car waxing, you know, like within a year or two, people asked me, can you wax a car? I'm like, sure, I'll wax a car. I hadn't done it. I'll figure it out. And then, so that business grew while the bicycle deal, I think it was a seasonal shift or something. You know, in California, it gets down to like 50 and everyone's like, oh, you know, freezing, you know. It's funny, I've been living in Colorado and now Idaho since 07. So it's like, 50s when you get the bikes all out.
Oh yeah, that's when
it's the best time ever. But they're cold. So yeah, so the car business really, the car washing business and the car waxing business, which then turned into car detailing.
Yeah,
picked up and really took over.
So let's get to where you. Let's go to where you're in. Your college comes first, right? Where you.
High school. I'll tell you. It's worth mentioning a high school experience that we had that I had. And, you know, when I say that I don't like the word I as much as just people say I, me, I just tune out. So when I say we, it's usually me and a buddy, me and an employee, me and some of my team members. In high school, so the car washing business kept going pretty well. And I realized that I'm driving around a lot. You know, I turned 16 finally, and I'm doing mobile detailing, right? And I'm spending a lot of time driving around. And I started thinking about what customers I could get that would have a lot of vehicles at one location. So I started just kind of driving around. I'm looking for shiny trucks, plumbing contractors that care about their equipment. And then, you know, this is 1987, right? Full on, this is the year of the limousine. In limousines, people have, you got to have them clean. Every time they pick someone up, they got to have a clean limousine. So I went to there was five limousine companies in Irvine, Lake Forest, Laguna Niguel, in that area. And I would go to, I went to one, and I just, you know, out of the Yellow Pages, I started just looking them up. And I said, hey, my name's Adam, and I'm a car detailer, and I see your fleet here, and I think I could add value, and I would love it if you let me do one car for free. And they're like, and every one of them had the same response. Every single guy was like, for free. You're like, and almost everyone was like, you're going to screw up my cars.
Yeah, that's a natural response. Sure.
You know what? And I said, hold on. And I kept pictures, you know, because, you know, I took pictures of cars and I developed them, and I had a little flipper to show before and after photos, because everyone wants to know, can you really clean an engine? Here's what I just did on this. Here's what I did on this. Here's what I did. I would show customers interiors and stuff. So I had a little flip, and I said, listen, take a look at some of the cars I've done. This is before, like, Instagram, when you just have before, after, you know, scroll. But they're like, okay, kid. You know, and they'd always give me the most roached out, horrible limo, naturally. And I just work hard on it. And I got all of them, every one of those guys that did it. One of them ended up having a, I think he had a habit. He was always, freaked out, you know,
sure.
which really was common for the 80s, but especially common for the 80s in limousine business. It was like, you know, a lot of partying going on in the back of limousines.
A lot of late nights.
Yeah. I cleaned up a lot of barf out of the back of limousines too. a lot of puke. But that really helped me change the way I looked at detailing, because I started doing fleets, and the fleets required, I had to get a lot of cars done in a really short amount of time. That's when the process of detailing became really clear, that I need to save time because I'm spending so much money paying my guy or my guys. I had one initially and then two guys to get this done. So we started looking at, like, we'd go there, turn the hose on, blast the car off, start washing it, and then the car's clean, then you start doing the wheels. Meanwhile, I'm doing the wheels and all the water that's all over the car starts to water spot. And now I've got water spots that I got to go polish off or remove and rub off or whatever. I'm like, oh man, what a, so, okay, let's change this, guys. We're going to start doing the wheels and tires first. Then we're going to do the engine compartment. Then we're going to do the exhaust tips, because all those things take more than normal amount of time. And we don't know how long it's going to take us. By doing that, that's all done by the time you put water on the paint. And then this way, we're not going to put water spots on the car. That saved like an hour a car, because cleaning up the water spots took so long. And then adjusting the bristles on the brush, the white limousines had white vinyl tops. And by using the firm bristle brush, it wouldn't really get into the nooks and the grooves of the vinyl. You know, it's a textured vinyl. Yeah. I was like, gosh, that took a long time to scrub it so hard. And then I went to a softer bristle brush, and boy, did that work better. And we moved from, you know, some kind of cleaner to simple green, and that worked really good. That really improved things. So constantly improving the system gave us the ability to constantly reduce the amount of man hours it took to detail a limousine. That process improvement made dollars. It wasn't just, oh, I'm just really smart. I could pay my guys 2 hours versus 4 hours and get the same outcome if I just improve the process, improve the chemicals, improve the brushes, the towels, you know, which order you do things. And it made it really meaningfully more profitable in business.
Do you still use that process today in terms of the order of operation?
Well, it's gotten a lot better.
So how, if you do the tires and wheels first, but when you're hosing the car off, isn't that going to just water spot the wheels and tires, and you got to do that again? Or
yeah.
Is that
a little bit, but not, I mean, tires don't water spot, are they? Yeah, they don't.
So you just give them a little quick little
wipe down. Yeah.
Yeah.
They get it wet again. I can do it, but no, they didn't really water spot too bad. Black paint, the fastest thing to water spot is the hottest surface. So on limousines, all the windows are tinted black, white or black cars. So that black, if you go and touch the side of the car, let's say the sun's up here, the side of the car that's facing the sun has the hottest glass.
Sure.
You know, that side of the black car gets really hot. So the water dries instantly. That's the other thing. Like, we'd always wash the side, rinse the side of the car in the shade first and wash it and rinse it again before you even put water on the sunny side of the car. Because this way you keep that entire side of the hot side of the car, you keep it from getting any water spots because you don't even put water on it. Use the sun to make sure that you're doing the shaded stuff to reduce the amount of time. Again, any of those little things just reduce the amount of brain damage and extra time that you got to pay someone or do it myself. Didn't profit.
It's great. I mean, and I had a little detail business too, but I wasn't thinking like you. And that's, I think, where you really start to see the separation into a business versus, you know, a kid who's probably destroying cars with the things I was doing. So you're continuing through high school.
Yeah.
And then you get, you're doing that. You're honing your processes. Mm-hmm. Does that lead you all the way up through college where you're supplementing your income that way?
Yep. Yeah. So the limousine detailing was very good. And I also did a lot of private people's cars. That was great. And I did it through high school. I went to USC, and at USC, there were a lot of rich kids there. And a lot of the kids' parents lived in Pasadena. San Marino, Pasadena area is a very wealthy area. And it was really close to downtown LA where I was going to college. So I'm student loans and I'm detailing cars and I'm picking up some pretty cool cars. I mean, I've got a lot of neat customers. Even some of the kids that I went to school with, my fraternity brothers, I detail their cars. And that business kept me going pretty well through that. And always trying to make a little bit of an improvement in the system. And it wasn't just like, oh, I'm just so smart, I want to make the system better. I'm experiencing pretty good brain damage by doing it the wrong way, you know, by not using an efficient system. Is taking me twice as long to do a car, and I can only do one car a day versus two cars a day, or three washes versus five washes. That, it really paid. It wasn't just like, oh, I'm just really trying to just be this awesome, amazing guy. It's like, no, I'm spending a lot of time not making money until I figure out a way to be more efficient.
What was the pull on, you're at USC, but were you being pulled and thinking about like how you can improve your systems or, oh, I really like this product and I've got this customer lined up and I know I'm going to do this. Or are you thinking about your political science class? Like, where's this going? Did you enjoy that time in college, or were you like, yeah, I need to get out of here because the pull is so strong?
Yeah.
That I got to go. I know I need to go do this. Or you're not there yet.
No, it wasn't there yet. And the business, the detailing business, wasn't really going to pay enough.
So it's good college money,
yeah,
but not life money.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. That's exactly right. You know? Yeah. My dad was like, hey, son, just so you know, how much it costs to have you, your sister, and your brother, you know, in high school. I remember my dad was like, because my dad's, he's a PhD, you know, he's an educator, always been a professor, ended up with a vocational college, and then he had another one. So he ended up being successful later in his life. Anyway, he's like, listen, you hurt your hand, you're out of business. You know, being a manual labor, like he was thinking pretty much focused on, you need to be an executive. And most of the country was like that. You know, trades were looked really down upon, which is awesome. Today you see trades, people going, you should go into the trades.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I could go off on another huge tangent on trades. I mean, I think without trades, I mean, my college degree I've never had a job. I've never worked for, you know, a real salary by anyone. I tried to sell real estate after college. And I'll tell you what, I had the worst time ever being employed. I was the worst employee ever.
Well, this was a bit of a telemarketing role-ish.
Well, yeah, I worked for this big commercial real estate business. They were mostly involved in selling multifamily, so apartment buildings and stuff like that. And one of my fraternity brothers, John Susank, he went and got a job there. And he said, Adam, this is an amazing thing. You know, you just go out there, you make tons of money. Tons of money. Sounds great. The only money I made in real estate was washing their cars, you know, the other agents' cars. I was horrible at it. And I got no satisfaction out of it. And I was making phone cold calls. Mr. Jones, I understand you've got a 24 unit apartment building in Torrance. You know, you think I'd love to share a rent survey with you and maybe give you evaluation. And, oh, who is this? Who are you calling from? Are you a broker? Oh, if I get another call from another broker, F you, la, 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 la. Like, people were, they were pissed. This is the mid-90s. We were in a recession. The market was in the tank. Interest rates were high. A lot of people were buried in their buildings. They weren't cash flowing. And I had to sit there. And then as soon as I get cussed out, you had to pick up the phone and dial another one. Because when you start off in real estate, you're in a bullpen and fluorescent lights and a suit and tie. And I was like, boy, this isn't for me. No. This is really not for me. So one weekend I was like, I need to do something else. And by the way, I'm at that point in my life, we go out to lunch with the brokers. We go have, drink beers, get way too wasted for lunchtime, lunchtime type thing. Cause I was miserable, I was drowning my unhappiness and that. And oh boy, I was rough. That was the most high friction part of my whole life.
But so frame in the timing here. You're graduated college?
Just graduated.
So yeah. So trying to figure out, what's my life look like? I'm kind of good at this thing over here, but like you were saying earlier, this like draw into the social class system. And I'm where I think we're the exact same age, very similar upbringing. We're like, hey, you're going to do some kind of white collar job. And that's the status, right? We want to maintain that status. And we're not going to work with our hands. We're not going to be, it was kind of not like in my family. And I feel like my circles, which is so weird to think about that. Yeah. That wasn't like an acceptable career path. When, as you said today, like certainly it is. And it's what literally makes the world go round. Yeah. Not necessarily these jobs where you take the paper from the left side of your desk over to the right side of your desk.
Yeah.
Okay. So you're trying to figure it all out.
Yeah. So I graduated. I've got $200,000 in student loan debt with a degree in social science. No, political science, right?
Sweet.
Right?
Yeah.
That gonna pay?
Yeah,
and I'm like, wow. Well, now what? Here I am in high friction, and my buddies had gone on to their family businesses, right? And they were just gonna step right in. My best friend, my college roommate, stepped into the family business. His name's Matt Dugally, one of my dearest friends in the world. And he elevated the business totally. And in fact, he jumped into that business. His dad is an architect, and Matt became a builder. He became to actually build the structures that his dad designed. And he was one of the most, he was designing and building homes for all these really high profile people. One of them was Sylvester Stallone. And another guy was a singer that probably your mom and my mom probably know. Paul Anka was another singer.
Oh, sure.
And some of these other just really zillionaire people. So Matt introduces me to these people because he notices that their cars are really dirty. And I'm like, cool. So I start detailing again. After I graduate, Matt's in the workforce. He's feeding me a pretty steady line of really high end. I'm hanging out with Sylvester Stallone every week, cleaning his cars. He's walking around his property up in Hollywood Hills. He's a really cool guy. Anyway, so and I'm just feeling like really less than, because all these guys that I went to college with are all like off in these totally, successful businesses now. They just stepped into their family business, a lot of old money there. And I'm their car detailer. It's kind of like Back to the Future, like Biff,
Yeah.
I'm their servant.
Yeah.
So I felt pretty low, even though, I had a cool business going and I was, making okay money. Compared to them, I was not. They were doing much better than I. And then at that point, when I thought I might jump into my family business, right when I graduate, my dad's company goes under, and his whole, all five of his schools closed. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was going to be I was going to do the same thing like my buddies.
Yeah, right.
Take the baton, start running. But, running and grabbing a baton from an already running business, and you just take it and you just keep rolling with it. Boy, isn't that nice. And my deal was hard stop. Let's start over. And I remember thinking that like I was really served a sort of a less than kind of life. Like I was really a, I'm a servant. I'm a laborer. Boy, I wonder if I'm ever gonna, you know, create anything big or anything successful and be anything other than someone else's servant.
Yeah. Did you have the vision that this skill that you had honed at an early age, this attention to detail, would serve you? Did you start to, this is my gift, this is where I need to go with it? Or was it a little more fell into evolution kind of path that then you then leaned into full bore?
Yeah, I think evolution for sure, because the way that I had made money for my whole life was certainly manual labor, and the promise of this executive assistant, you know, existence and in this high net worth kind of person becoming that just didn't come into focus at all. And you know, I wasn't even really a Christian then. I wasn't really like praying on this stuff. I was just taking one in the face and then, you know, patching up the wound and keep going and taking another one, taking a kick in the nards, keep on going. Oh, that stung. I don't want to do that again. After trying to sell real estate, I realized that I'm better at dealing directly with customers in person. And I also know that I'm better at detailing cars than I am at selling real estate. So I went, I'd been buying this product, car detailing products, from the local Porsche dealership. Now, my dad bought the worst Porsche ever made, which is a Porsche 924. He bought it new in 1979, sepia, which is a, you know, poop brown, which is today awesome. And back then it was, probably back then it was awesome too. But it was a long, you know, between 1980 and 2010, it was probably or 2020 even, it was probably the worst color ever. But it had problems all the time. So he would go to the Porsche dealership and he would take me with him to go pick up or drop off this Porsche because it went back over and over again, brand new for warranty repairs. And they had this product there that they were selling. There was this guy, Der Dave. Der, like the in German, right? D-E-R.
Wow. Yeah.
Der Dave is in the back and he has a Bertone X19. You know what a Fiat X19 is? Remember that little, it's a little tiny Fiat Targa top.
Yeah.
Little pointy nose. Yeah. Kind of like a TR7, you know, Triumph TR7 wannabe. He would light it on fire. He would squirt lighter fluid on it and light it on fire and do demonstrations for the customers of the Porsche dealership out front and sell them car cleaning products, polishes, waxes, you know, cleaners, things like that. He had this pitch though. He was a pitchman and he was an ex-military guy and he would sit there and do that. And I was like,
that's cool.
It's cool. You know, so I bought some and I initially started using it to clean bicycles. I bought it, you know, way back, you know, so I'm going back in the time, right? But we became friends. We stayed tight and I've always used this stuff. And what we ended up doing is, I went over to him and I was still selling real estate and I was still suffering and doing a little detailing on the side. And I said, Dave, what are you doing with this company? And are you, he's like, well, Adam, I got to tell you what happened. Old Bill Yates died. He didn't have his estate in order. So they sold all the assets of the company, including this polish company, because Bill Yates, the Porsche dealer, was the partner. But he really just had the money behind the startup. It was sold on the courthouse steps, probate style, and some guy that owned a wheel and tire shop in Costa Mesa bought it, and it's no longer the same. It's no longer the same kind of company, but so we haven't been doing very well with it. I said, well, no one knows about it. I don't see anyone. No one ever talks about this stuff. This is all before the internet. Why don't we take it and sell it at the Orange County Swap Meet? Let's just go out there. That's where I always bought my clothes. My dad took us there as kids. You know, we go get Italian bread, olives, and all of our school supplies, all of our school clothes and stuff. And I'm like, let's go try it. Like, I have nothing to lose. You know, there's nothing better and more upside potential than a person with nothing to lose. And I had nothing to lose. So I went out there and I have a picture of it on my phone. I'll show it to you. Maybe we'll throw it up on this podcast.
Yeah.
Of the first day that I went out there and I hired the girl who was our title rep from the real estate office, Jeannie. She came out with me, borrowed a truck, got a paint cloth from Home Depot, put it over a folding table I borrowed, and we tried to sell Dur Shiny stuff out there at the Orange County Swap Meet. It was February 7th of 2000, and doing demonstrations, showing people, hey, you want to know how to get the blue jean stains out of your tan leather seats? Let me show you how. You want to know how to get the inside of your windshield clean in a way that stays clean and you can easily just use a towel to wipe it off? We sold diapers because baby diapers were the best cloths you could buy. This was before microfiber towels. And then I had a chance, and this is, again, looking back, this is absolutely God coming into my world and directing the show. Whether you know it or not, right? It's his show. 100%. This was the most obvious ever. It was that I had a chance to deal across the table, face-to-face, all day Saturday and all day Sunday with people facing car care questions that wanted a better process, that wanted to understand how to clean their wheels and tires, how to clean their engine, how to remove the blue jean stains, how to get the water spots off, get the swirl marks out. And I was given an opportunity to create a system, a process, and then eventually a product line that was really good.
Full trial by fire.
Fully by skinning my knuckles.
Yeah.
Whoops, that didn't work. And then by listening to the customer, I listened to the customers all day, every day. I mean, you couldn't pay for that pure and perfect
feedback.
Of feedback.
Yeah, marketing feedback, yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Thank you, Lord, for that. It was amazing. And then I realized people don't want to buy one. Okay, here's your one bottle for that. Here's the applicator. Here's the towel. It's like, okay, gosh, I need the paper. I need the test. So then people say, well, how am I going to remember this? So then I did an 8.5 by 14 legal sheet. And I said, step-by-step instructions. Here's how to do it. And on the other side, paso a paso instrucciones in Espanol, right? Because, you know, I was in Southern California and I speak Spanish. I started speaking Spanish early. Always had Spanish-speaking employees and friends. So we helped people get the results they wanted. And when they went home and they bought our stuff and they went home and they worked as advertised, the process did what I said it would do. I've created a totally perfect customer.
And what about Dur Dave?
Dur Dave is
where
out
is
there.
He? What's he doing?
He's with me every weekend.
He is,
and he's because
he lighting his doing too good. Stuff on fire, and
we lit it on fire.
Yeah,
every weekend, and that stopped people in their tracks.
That's so good.
We would light it on fire, and it would stop people in their tracks. Dur Dave taught me exactly how to just make everyone passing by a potential customer. He literally did, and it was amazing. But what Dave didn't have, like when you go to the AutoZone or something, you see just a bottle on the shelf. How do you use it? What do you spray it on? What do you apply it with? What do you remove it with? If it's like a tire shine, what do you put it on? You spray it? What do you do? Like, so we created the Essentials Detail Kit, quote unquote. And I bought buckets and I had all the products that you would use to wash the car, the wash pad, the drying towel, the wash soap, and the wash mitt and all that stuff. And then the stuff for the vinyl, the stuff to clean the vinyl, the stuff to dress the vinyl, the stuff to make all the black plastic look nice and dark again. And then something happened that changed. So the kit's amazing. They were $80 and it had everything in it. And just say, hey, listen, I know you want that, but you're going to, what are you going to wash the car with? What are you going to dry it with? How are you going to do your interior? What are you going to do for the headlights? So I just started selling these detail kits, and the detail kits sold very well. Everybody walked away with a kit, and then they came back and bought refills. And every time they had a problem, they know where to go. They go to the Orange County Swap Meet and go see Adam at the Dur Shiny Stuff booth. Probably about 3 months in to that time there at the swap meet, I moved locations. I doubled the size of my tent. Things got really interesting. And at that point, I had a lot better understanding of what customers wanted. I'd heard the same questions.
Let me drill down for a second. So is everything under this Dur Dave brand?
It was Dur Stuff.
Dur Stuff
was the product we were selling. And then one thing happened, which changed everything. So one day just a few months after we started selling at the swap meet, the business was going pretty well. We're busy as heck, and we're selling a lot of stuff. In fact, we bought all the product that was on the shelves at the Durstuff plant every Friday, and they would spend all week bottling so that I could have it ready again on Friday, and I'd go sell it on the weekends. One day, I'm out there. It was a Sunday morning, maybe around 10 or 11 in the morning. This guy walks up to me, and he has his hat on backwards, and he has Oakley Iridium blades on, you know, gold.
So sweet.
You know, you can't see his eyes, you know. He is at the end of a, you know, he's got a giant fat cigar, and he's already smoked it all the way down to the nub. And he's got, they used to sell these huge beers, like 32-ounce beers. So I don't know if it was 32 or 24, just some big, huge beer. He's already at the end of his beer, end of his stogie, and it's early. So he's not feeling any pain, you know. Kind of a bigger dude, gray hair, long gray hair, kind of. And I'm like, oh boy, here we go. We got a character. But I'd long ago, I learned that you cannot judge a book by its cover. I've had some toothless looking, overall wearing, banjo playing kind of people walk into the booth and, you know, buy everything I've got times three. And I'm like, wow, okay, these people do not judge a book by its cover. So this guy walks up, goes, oh man, I got a problem. I got these trucks. They're changing color on me. And I'm like, really? He's like, yeah, they're faded. I can't even afford to put tires on my trucks anymore. All my budget is going to repainting these trucks. And I'm like, okay. He goes, is there a detailer here that I could talk to? And I'm like, I'm your guy. I'm a detailer. You know, I've been doing it for a long time and I'd like to help. He's like, well, why don't you come and see my trucks and tell me if you can help me?
Are you ready to blow the guy off though? Or like, cause when someone says that, you're like, bro, come, and his appearance, like you said, you're like, dude, I'm not going to your place to see your, or like, how are you accepting his offer?
I think that I was so incredibly sick of going into the office at the real estate office. Cause I was still doing that Monday through Friday.
Oh
right?
Man.
And then I'm doing the swap meet on the weekends. I was so sick of that I'm ready to do anything.
Okay.
So give me a reason not to go into work tomorrow morning, Monday morning.
Yeah.
You know, this is Sunday morning. He's like, come see me tomorrow morning. And I said, great. Could you have a card? No. Okay. I go, do you want to give me your address? Yeah. So I give him my card. He just flips it over. Doesn't even take a card. Just flips my card over, writes down his address, blah, blah, blah. South Central Avenue, Los Angeles, California. My name's Ron Vogt. Ron Vogt. V-O-G-T. I go, all right, Ron. I'll see you tomorrow. Great. Turns around, walks off. So next morning, I get up. I drive to LA. I go to that address, and it is the Coca-Cola corporate headquarters. And I'm like,
oh, dude.
No way. And he's right. All of his trucks were turning pink. All of them. Red trucks, they oxidize. You know, you can wipe your fingers on it, and you're pulling up, you know, pink, oxidized paint. And I'm like, gosh, that's crazy. So I did a little spot on one of them, and it got it better, but not perfect. So I walk into the office, and it's the Coca-Cola fleet department. So they have four square blocks of downtown LA, Coca-Cola. It's huge. One is the fleet department. One is the bottling plant. One's the manufacturing plant. And then one's just a warehouse where they store all the material, all the product. So I walk into the fleet department, and I'm like, yeah, hey, I'm looking for Ron Vogt. And this guy walks out, total crisp, white shirt, you know, hair all greased back. And he goes, that's me. I was like, wow, because I never saw the guy's eyes. I'd like, wow, Ron, I'm the detailer from the swap meet. Oh, yeah, come here, get in. Puts me in his head, like a little metal Cushman cart, you know, like a little industrial kind of a golf cart, only like industrial style. Get in, let's go. So we start ripping all around the fleet department, and we're looking at all these trucks, and sure as heck, they're all really oxidized. So I said, okay. And then they had the little vans, the Astro vans and the Ford Aerostar vans. They use those for doing like the small, like liquor stores and stuff where they couldn't pull full trucks and truck in to offload the Coca-Cola products. Well, sure enough, they were white and they were all chalky too. So like, yeah, we can polish that out. We can fix this. We can do this. He's like, great. He goes, well, let me tell you, I've got, I've got 3,400 vehicles. And I need them. I'm repainting them right now every 2 years. So instead, I want to detail them every 2 years instead. I'm like, great. 3,400 vehicles.
I mean,
like,
if you cold called and tried to get a guy on the phone, no, it's never going to happen.
Never. That was, you know, that was God smiling and just intervening.
Yes.
Because there's no other way. This
yes.
guy needed a solution. It wasn't a service that I ever advertised. It wasn't a service that I've ever done. I've never detailed a big rig.
And by the way, you still got to solve this guy's problem,
too. And I got to solve this guy's problem. He's got a problem. I said, how's $220 a truck sound to do these trucks? Because he was paying $2,200 to repaint the whole bonnet, the whole front clip of a Freightliner truck and the cab, which is cheap. But, you know, when you got an account and you're doing thousands of trucks a year, you can get a pretty good price. I said, I'll do it for 10% of that. So I said, $220, let's do it. And he's like, done. When can you start? I'm like, I need a minute because I don't have any employees, you know, besides my people that help me at the swap meet on the weekends. So I set up some employees. I had a buddy help me learn how to do these trucks because I hadn't done a lot of gel coat. Those are gel coat. You use a buffer instead of just a polisher, you know, to cut all the oxidation off. So I leaned on my buddy Jason Mentis, and he was a ballistic detailing was his company. He was really into it. He showed me how to do it. Let me borrow his trailer for a while till I could build my own. So I had a pressure washer trailer that I could do a move around the fleet yard because you can't just move the trucks around. They're all set up, you know, in tight quarters. We had to then take and run extension cords from all four corners of the lot to run heat lamps because, remember, we're only detailing from 4 p.m. until 4 a.m. That's the only time the trucks are stopped. So we had to be done at off the property at 4 a.m., because they start loading at 4 a.m. and out they go between 5 and 6. So we had a really specific amount of time that we had to get done. We went from plant to plant to plant. At the end of the day, all the fifth wheel grease, all the nasty fifth wheel grease, we had to get that off of all of our vacuum hoses, our pressure washer hoses, and our extension cords. We had to gasoline wash all that. We jumped my old beat up F-250, and we would all smell like gasoline. All my guys I got from Home Depot, the Home Depot parking lot, all those guys wanting to work out there, most of them were in painter's clothes, and I went through about 20 or 30 of those guys before I got a real quality crew of six. And
you're nocturnal, right?
You're all night. Yeah.
Yeah. How much were you doing that? Like, how many night shifts were you on most of them?
Oh, yeah. All of them.
All of them.
Oh, yeah. Me and my guys were doing it. None of the other guys had, like, driver's licenses or anything or trucks. So we were doing it, and that gave me the out from the real estate business. So, boom.
Social life's probably gone for a while.
Social life is gone.
Oh, it's gone.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, girls. I
no.
And yeah. Then I moved. And then I got a warehouse. I got this little tiny warehouse, 1,000 square feet on Inglewood Avenue in Redondo Beach, California. I was right on the railroad tracks. And I moved into it. I put a bed up in the loft and eventually put a – I showered at the – I showered at 24 Hour Fitness.
Pretended like you were working out or
– Yeah. I did the – I called it the tribathlon. I go in, I get a shower, I do a sauna, and a hot tub or the steam shower. And anyway, I do the triathlon. I go in there and do that, and you know I'm in bed by five six in the morning, sleep until noon, but that did get me out of the real estate business.
So let's go back to you're now I've got this. You've solved the problem. You've got the fleet trucks going, but you're still buying tons of chemicals at this point, right? At a wholesale.
Yeah.
So you're kind of getting crushed on costs related to the product end of the business, right?
And the process was too long. It was taking me, the first couple of trucks we did took 9 man hours, 3 dudes, 3 hours. So I wasn't going to make any money on these trucks if it was taking me 9 man hours to do them. We went to the chemical companies that were making some of the products that we liked. And then we started combining chemicals on the buffing pad. I would take a compound and a polish, combine them so that I could buff once versus twice, buff a truck once versus twice. We found that we needed a more serious chemical. We would pressure wash out the inside of the trucks. There was so much syrup. So you're walking around the plant, there's spilled Coke back then. I'm sure it's clean. I'm sure it's clean as a whistle now, but back then there was spilled Coke everywhere. And so there's, so you put your feet on the inside of the truck and it's like, yeah. you just stepped on, you know, like sticky, like a Coke. You stepped on a Coke, you know, spilled Coke before. It just sticks to your shoes. It's gross. That's the whole inside of the trucks were like that. Guys walking in and out of the back of the truck. I'm sure that Coke spilled in the back of the truck too. So there's just, we had to step up the chemicals. You know, Simple Green wasn't cutting it. We need something more aggressive to cut that nastiness. We need to come up with some acid for cleaning the aluminum wheels and the tanks and polishing that. We started using the Coca-Cola experience all night. And I went from doing a lot of the detailing as my guys got better and better. I went to just using it as a lab, testing chemicals, testing buffing pads, testing buffers, testing polishers, testing brushes, testing towels, all this stuff that I'm selling on the weekends.
So we're still Dirt Dave.
Dirt Dave's still there. But then I started putting a bottle out on the table every other week of Adams.
Mm.
Because this stuff I needed, Dirt Dave wasn't about to come out with a new product every week.
But your competition now on the table. How was he viewing that?
He owned none of the company at that point. He didn't have the owner mentality.
Okay. I thought he was, okay. So he didn't.
Yeah. The company was sold out from under him. He felt slighted by that. I don't think it wasn't good for him to sell the company. And this guy that bought it wasn't a really great guy. You know, he was, you know, Armenian guy. He just had a different way of doing business than we did. And it just was, it wasn't great. So what ends up happening is I replace one by one, I replace all of the Dirt stuff except for two bottles because I'm like, I've got a better mousetrap. And by the way, I'm having it made in such huge bulk because we're doing hundreds of trucks a week. Like I'm buying major bulk of chemicals now and I'm getting a pretty good price. And I like the idea of having things that were in a line so that you're using step one, step two, step three, step four. Everything, when I first started, Adams had a step one, step two, step three. Step one, wash. Step two, you know, blah, blah, blah. So I got down to two bottles. I went in to pick up my stuff. The last two bottles, which is the Dureal stuff, the polish, and the shiny stuff, which is the glaze. And I went in there and I said, hey, Dur. He goes, Adam, I can't sell you any stuff. His face was down. He was blue. He goes, I can't sell you. The owner, I'll, you know, keep his name, you know, away. But he said, you got your own line now. You don't need us anymore. So he's not going to sell you anymore. I said, really? That's really after all the business that we did together. But he was, you know, he had an ego and he was butthurt. He was bummed that the business was going really well, way better than it had probably ever when I was selling all of it. And it trailed off pretty hard after I started doing our own stuff. So, and again, thank you, Lord, that weekend, because if I was going to go out there and not have two, those are the two main sellers, those two final products. That weekend, both days, rainouts, and the swap meet didn't open.
Yeah. I mean, come on.
How else could that work out? I would have totally let down hundreds of customers, but I didn't have to. That next week, I had products replaced, both of those. Improved, and every time we're improving them, right? The chemical technology today, if I was to come out with a new line of products today, you know, chemical technology has just gone way better, just better, better, better. Ceramics, everything's just gotten so crazy. So back then, the older stuff and the stuff that we were coming out with was way improved. I mean, there's always an improvement you can make.
And didn't you add it down to the actual scents with, and I don't mean dollars and cents, I mean the scent, the smell. That you wanted, was that per thing you were selling, or, and so you designated a scent in every single product that you made.
We did a scent and a color, and I'll tell you the main two reasons we did that.
And the color.
Yeah, scent and color. For one, you know, I'm speaking Spanish as an American to these guys, and my Spanish is okay. I speak pretty good Spanish. I started in seventh grade. It was so much easier to say, use the blue stuff, use the red stuff, use the pink stuff, use the yellow stuff, use that stuff. And we just made everything such a bright color so that there was just no question which stuff to use. And then all the team were instantly trained without having to think about, reading labels. We didn't want to read labels. Just make it so obvious. So that was it. And then working all night with horribly smell. I mean, at this point, okay, in 2000, when I started this, 2000, no chemicals had good smells to them. No polishes had any scents added. No waxes, no cleaners. Nothing was smelling good. The only thing that smelled decent was Simple Green. You know, smelled.
I know that smell.
You know that smell.
Oh, yeah.
That was the only thing that smelled good. Everything else smelled bad. And you're working with it all night long or all day long, you know, in detailing. So I'm like, I'm going to make this. I want to make this, everything smell good because I don't like working with stuff that smells bad, especially airborne stuff. Anything you have to spray. You spray stuff, it atomizes in the air, and you smell it a lot. So we had these chemical manufacturers. I would take one chemical from one chemical manufacturer and another one from a different one. And I would take it to the chemist at each place and say, hey, this is your stuff. I like it 30%. This is your competitor stuff. I like it 70%. I need to mix them together. And I'd mix these two things together, you know, at the Coke plant all night. Two thick creams, you mix them together, it becomes milk. You put it on the buffing pad and it just slings everywhere. Just becomes completely airborne. And you got to clean the mess up, right? So I need it to be thick so that it doesn't require a whole bunch more time to clean it up. We also realized, again, process. There's these requests that I had. You know, the rubber, the stuff that for treating all the rubber. If you put this rubber stuff off on and it got on the glass, it took forever. This heavy petroleum-based conditioner, you couldn't get it off the glass. It took forever. So we started meddling with that. How do we fix that? Because it took too much time. Everything was about shaving minutes off the detail. Minutes off the detail and making it so that your guys aren't miserable. You know, if you got miserable guys, you go through guys too much. If you have to work too hard to get something done because the process is broken, you go through guys too much. Hiring and firing guys was the worst possible thing in your business is having to go through and retrain a new guy.
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah, I need to talk about that product. I know it would get that like fog on the glass.
Oh, yeah.
You would wipe and wipe and wipe.
Yeah.
Couldn't get it off.
This is before microfiber towels, right? Microfiber changed everything. Then you could wipe stuff off with microfiber.
Yeah.
Before then it was cotton.
So you figure out all these. So there's systems of, there's order of operation, and then you've got all your product line down. Are you patenting and trademarking and doing all along the way?
No. We were going to patent.
What are you talking about?
Not one. Never. What? Never. And the funny thing is we went through the process.
That's crazy now, right?
Yeah. Well, so we were based in California for one, right? And you want to have a tough time doing business? Just go do a business in California. That's the hardest state in the union to do business, especially chemical business. By the time we tried to do one patent. We tried to patent one chemical. By the time we got the patent, it was 3 years. The money that we had to pay the patent attorney to do it and the amount of energy and time wasted doing it, we had improved the chemical twice in the 3 years. Because chemicals are, you're always improving your technology. This is not like a, you know, curing cancer drug where you really need to make sure that you have your thing. You can change the color and the smell to get past the 10% or 12% or whatever the percent must be different for it to be a patentable thing. So it's like, it didn't even matter. So it was totally a waste of time to try to patent it. By the time we're done with patenting it, it's going to be better again. So
what about how are you staving off competition at that point? Or like they couldn't catch you or you weren't worried about them?
We were so small. I mean, remember, this is after 16 years. I mean, we kept growing the business, The swap meet kept growing and got better. I added a team that are incredible at the swap meet eventually. A lot of people that were not incredible initially and then had to work through them. And then I ended up with just a great team. And then I could leave. You know, I bought a trailer, started going to car shows all over the country. And I'm just dragging still no internet. So you got to go show up to sell your stuff. The competition were still the big players, Meguiar's, Mother's,
Armor All.
Yeah, those guys. There was one player that was really in my space. I felt like they were the people that were doing what I wanted to do, which was Griot's Garage, Richard Griot out of Tacoma, Washington. I just think he's first class business. I really liked, I admired what Griot's Garage did. So I, you know, very much thought they were a competitor, but we were so new and we were just growing so fast. And realize with such a small company and me being able to peel off, you know, initially enough money to live and then eventually pretty good money as far as, you know, a single guy, $100,000 a year maybe, or $200,000 a year, and kept on going up and up. The competition, while they were all, they were huge. They were looking at retail placement in Walmart and AutoZone,
sure,
all those things.
Yeah.
You know, now, of course, Adams Polish is in all those, and now we're a major player. But back then, I was fine. I didn't feel like I needed to worry about competition. I was just trying to build a better mousetrap. If I can continue to build a better mousetrap, I'll always have business. And that's what we did. We made a better process. We constantly improved products. New and improved was part of it. Adam, what do you got new? People always walk up to our booth. Hey, what's new? Oh, you're going to love this. I got this glass ceiling. It's crazy. It's going to blow your mind. Let me show it to you. People loved it. And they'd always buy whatever I was selling because I always made sure that I had an excellent product. We always focus on USA made products. You know, we just made sure that everything that we did was the best possible. And if we could figure out to do it better, do that.
So when does the product side overtake the detailing side?
The Coca-Cola plant was, the Coca-Cola business was big, you know, it was, you know, more than $1 million a year in revenue. It wasn't hugely profitable because it took a ton of man hours to get that work done. But in 2005, there was an explosion at a Coca-Cola plant. While we were there, it was in Downey, California at their Downey plant. And I'm sure it's in the news and it's going to be a Googleable thing. I haven't Googled it, but there was a Coke plant, basically a propane tank, which was used to refuel the forklifts, exploded, blew out a wall, and some pallet racking on the other side of it with a bunch of Coke on it came down. Nobody was around. I don't think anybody got hurt, but OSHA was on their way to the plant. And at that point, the guys who were in charge of the facility came to me and said, "Hey, Adam, I need you to go ahead and get off the premises." And I'm like, "Okay, yeah, we'll finish up this truck." And they're like, "No, we kind of need you off the premises right now. We don't need any extra friction here. We you heard the explosion that's just happened. We need to get every vendor off the facility ground so that we can deal with this, you know, this with nightmare that's coming." I said, "You got it. I'm out of here." So cleaned up, packed up, got out of there. And then the next day or the next week, they came to me and said, "Hey, by the way, we don't have any workman's compensation insurance on file for your guys. You know, we just want to make sure you have that." And I'm like, not only do I not have any workman's compensation, I go, I don't have a single green card in my entire crew. No. I'm like, I'm paying all my guys. I would use the cash from the swap meet money to pay my team doing the Coke truck detailing. I couldn't get guys to work that were, you know.
Oh no.
That was anyway. It
goodbye
was
Coca-Cola contract.
My and goodbye Coca-Cola contract.
Yeah.
And it was kind of time anyway. They were using degreaser to wash the trucks, a heavy degreaser like you would use to cut oil. That was prematurely oxidizing their trucks and their cars and everything.
Did they go back to it?
The company that was washing them, Great White was the name of them. The guy was so cool. And anyway, he just didn't know, but he was trying to get all this fifth wheel grease off the back of the trucks. He just used the same stuff to wash them all. Well, it was prematurely oxidizing. So we helped Coca-Cola and the truck washing company get a better soap, get a pH neutral soap, so they could wash these trucks, and then a spray that they could spray the grease down with and get it off. And now the trucks weren't so bad. By 2005, we were almost twiddling our thumbs. We weren't really causing as much impact to the fleet condition because at that point they weren't as bad. And so they said, you know, "Hey, we don't need it, you know?" And they were also interested in their union wanted to, they thought, well, it's a union shop, right? And you know how unions work. If there's an outside company doing something that an inside union guy could do, they're going to do it.
Yeah.
So they said, "Hey, thanks, but no thanks. We're done." I said, "No problem. This has been really wonderful for me. I can't, you know, thank you, Lord. Thank you, Ron Vogt, for this opportunity because it transformed our business. It was amazing." And then the business that of chemicals was way outpaced.
It already was. Okay.
Oh, yeah, by 2005.
Did you continue to run both parallel, or did you slowly phase out the detailing portion, or did
It was crazy. Like within a week, I feel like, but it was probably within 6 months. There was a company set up across the street, across the walkway from our little tent at the swap meet. They were testing they wanted to see public reaction to a toilet bowl cleaner that had a quick release on it. So you could scrub it with this little thing, take it over to the trash can, click, and you throw it away. So we don't have like this nasty thing. That company that was testing it was Clorox. Clorox Corporation was running a test to gauge public interest at the swap meet. They rented the booth across from ours. They watched us. It was the New Ventures part of Clorox. New Ventures sat there while we just crushed it. We had the music cranking. We're lighting the truck on fire. We are selling loads. People are walking away with buckets like crazy, you know. We're averaging pretty good money at the swap meet, by the way. At this point, we've been 5 years old. They came. They watched us. The Monday after that, I got an order on our website, which was brand new, by the way. Our website was brand new in 05 for like $3,500, which was enough to become a dealer for Adams. You know, I had like one dealer at that point. They then launched a full effort to buy our company. And that was, again, thank you, Lord, amazing. They tested our product. They wanted to see, is Adams Polishes possible to be a $100 million business? I don't know. I have no idea. I can tell you it's a $3 million business, but I can't tell you 100. They tested us. They ran a full, they did a full infomercial. They hired JB, who was a Fox Sports newscaster guy, football guy. They hired him. We did, I think you can look it up on YouTube. We did a full thing on in every major network across the country. And then they tried to buy us for about a year and a half. And then at the end decided they didn't want to buy us. The guy who was trying to buy us, the president, the CEO of Clorox, he actually had a heart attack, resigned. He lived. They hired the vice president of Coca-Cola, ironically. And that vice president of Coca-Cola had no interest in cars. Clorox owned Armorall and they owned STP. They sold Armorall. They sold STP. They got rid of all 13 companies that were in this New Ventures sort of cooker, incubator. They got rid of us. And they bought Burt's Bees instead for the same money.
Ooh, not a bad play either, though.
Which was probably a great play for them.
Yeah.
It couldn't have gone better for us. It was
so
amazing.
Okay, so you don't get bought. Yeah. And that portfolio kind of gets dumped. So there's kind of no demand for your type of offering, and it doesn't sound like you really cared. Sounds like you got a lot of great free publicity and press.
They paid us for the publicity.
And you got paid.
Yeah, they bought the stuff from us.
So how does it get wrapped? Like, how do you decide finally that you're going to have an exit, or how do we wrap this? Like, how does this happen for you?
So we grew the business and then kept growing.
Years later,
yeah. 2016.
Oh,
so
another decade
goes by. You know, I just keep grinding it out. You know, I get married 07, baby 08, you know, family. The whole thing that I'm creating became big and became more human resources than I was really good at. And it became other things other than, you know, I can polish and detail and sell it, but great. But we're always, you know, bumping up against, when microfiber towels came out, we tried to get big shipments of them in. It was really hard to get them in because we didn't have enough money. You know, our business was just, as much as, you know, we make $100 and spend 85 of it on inventory coming in.
How did you, let me ask a question I should have asked earlier. When you were developing these chemicals and growing the business, and like you said, you were cash flowing from, you know, using your cash literally and paying part of your labor force. Did you grow internally financed all out of profits? Did you have bank loans? Did you have your father, who's obviously a bright guy, did you ever go to him and be like, hey, I need a loan? Like, how did you do that? I think this is a key.
Oh, yeah.
This is a key to a lot of people's struggle. If they have the right idea and they have the proven concept, how do you take it to the next level? Yeah. So in your case, what did you do?
Started so small that you couldn't imagine how little money we required. Just did whatever we could and bootstrapped it all the way through. At one point, Coca-Cola told us that they were going to need 30 days to pay us. And I was like, there's no way. I can't pay my guys for 30 days out of cash on hand. I need to be able to, I'm going to need more money than that. Yeah. You know, and my dad at that point, I told my dad this. He goes, tell you what, son. He handed me a check. He goes, here's $5,000. I'll never forget that. Right when I started, that was a big chunk of dough. Figure what's 2026 money. It's 2025 money. It's probably $20,000 or $15,000, something big. And that helped me get through. And he says, go back to Coke. Make sure that they start paying you weekly. And I went to Coke and I said, guys, I can't afford to do this. And they said, sure, we'll pay weekly. And that was my one and only infusion of capital from my dad. The rest was just do whatever I could, be as conservative as I could until I was in a position to be bankable. Once I was bankable, once I could, get a loan, unfortunately, I had to get hard money loans. Hard money loans are like 20% interest. So I'd take like $100,000 and have to pay back $120,000. And I'd pay it back like in 3 months, right? But I had to. I wasn't bankable institutionally bankable.
Yeah.
I was just hard money loan kind of bankable. So it worked out that I just totally just did it. Now I got up to about $8 million in sales. In 2016, this guy found us through a friend and he had retired from Coors Tech. Coors Tech is the ceramics business that was started to build, to make Coors bottles.
Okay.
In Golden, Colorado, where they made the brewery. Here's the bottling plant.
I love the banquets.
The banquet, dude.
Yeah.
The banquet, the number one. So this guy worked as a miner at the mines and ceramics and the coal mine in Scotland, working for Coors, and then came to the USA and ended up moving his way up. His name's Derek Johnson, and he became CEO of Coors Tech from being a minor, no education. He just had that, what it takes to run a business. He was magic with it. He found me, and he's like, I want to be a partner. I want to buy into your business, and I want to grow it. And here's some people that I did it with. Go meet with them, see what you think, and let me know if you'd like to do business together. Okay, sounds good. Went and met those people. Wow, thumbs up. So he bought 10% of the company, then he bought another 10, and then another 10. Takes me 16 years to get the company to like $8 million. Derek comes and becomes partners, right? The most humbling thing ever. From 2016, 2019, we go from $8 million to $49 million in sales. So it was like, holy cow. Boy, do I not have that. Boy, was that amazing that it took me everything in the world that I had to get it from that to that. But then here, now I'm focused entirely on the marketing, on the product side, on the things that I actually enjoy. And he's doing all the other stuff. He became CEO of the company way better than me.
Was he still CEO of that?
He retired.
As soon as he started buying interest in Adams,
he started buying interest in Adams in 2016, became CEO in 2018.
Okay.
And it was magic.
Yeah, man, there are definitely levels to the game in terms of, so there's like entrepreneurial and then there's like operators.
Yes.
They're not necessarily the same thing. And I think like we have such a parallel story from even the same amount of money. Like I asked my dad for $5,000. My dad said, no, I got zero. You got $5,000, which is obviously a laughable amount of money in any regard. That's vapor in business.
But at that time, boy, that would have solved a lot of problems. Right?
It sure would have, yeah. But I share your, I think, and I don't know, maybe I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I feel like I was better at marketing and branding and understanding consumer space and sort of touch and feel and all the things that kind of surround the brand. Day-to-day operations, growing a business, dealing with HR, dealing with banks, that stuff, first of all, it doesn't light my fire. Like I'm not into it. So you know, in the same way I might have been more inspired by the branding part, you know, it's like that other stuff's kind of, so, you know, there are people that take businesses to different levels, right? And then I feel like there's all these, there's also like, this is a general statement, not including everyone, but when I see people that have really knocked it out of the park, I mean, like people that are like 100 million, half a billion or billionaire, that's a different human.
Yep.
I've not found those people to be particularly warm, fuzzy people.
Amen.
You know what I'm saying? I'm sure there's some out there.
Because we detail for them. I know those people. You know, like in college, we had guys, you know, because we were one of the most prestigious colleges. And I remember meeting some of these kids of these guys. And the families were screwed up.
Yeah.
They were not. I never wanted to be a billionaire.
No.
I didn't want an airplane. I mean, I don't know. I mean, if I got there, would it be horrible? I don't know. But I'm telling you, that's not a personality that I admire.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah.
You know, in a weird way. It's just, I more admire, right now I admire the metal worker that just, this guy Keaton that just built all the metal stuff for our car wash.
Yeah, the art of it.
I more admire this guy working with his hands on my truck than I do the billionaire because it's so amazing. I you know, admire these guys that just came out and installed our car wash equipment with their hands, and they worked like 14 hours a day for the last 4 days, and they just got it done, and they had an awesome attitude all the way through it. Like, I more admire that. But Derek came in, changed everything, made it so much smoother, so much more profitable, and he had the contacts. We grew it to that number. My oldest kid was 10. We decided my youngest was 3. It was time for me to not be gone all the time, because I was gone all the time. I was traveling to do business. You know, we're the licensed car care products of General Motors. So I'm at one GM location or another. We have this big relationship with Barrett Jackson. You know, we're the on-site detail. We go to all their auctions. We go to all these car shows all around the country. My absence was such a big part of what's wrong with my life. You know, that was broken.
Yeah.
My wife had to take care of all of it. I was gone.
Yeah.
You know, we weren't rich, but we were fine. But it wasn't like she could just hire all the help she needed. It was a struggle. It was a total struggle. And so when it became time, Derek says, hey, I think we're at that number. And the number that we always talked about was $100 million. He's like, I think we got there. When he said that to me in 2016, we became partners. I was like, sure, $100 million. Whatever. That sounds great, but I can't even think of that gap.
Right.
And I've never cared about, to this day, I still don't care about money. I'm not a money motivated person. I'm definitely more project and process and improvement. Those are exciting to me. You know, relationships are exciting to me. So anyways, we got to the point where the company was worth that much, and we took it to market. We took it to market. You won't believe it. In January of 2020. And right in the middle of COVID, to keep our numbers from collapsing, because all of a sudden, you know, March, everything goes just crazy. And we happened to have like a train car of isopropyl alcohol in our manufacturing. We use it for glass cleaner, use it for all kinds of stuff. Oh, in 2016, by the way, we bought our manufacturer. We bought our chemical manufacturer. Derek came in and we got a loan because he was bankable.
Sure.
We got a loan for $8 million, I think, to buy our chemical manufacturing company, B&B Blending. And that changed a lot for us. Made us the priority. We're the number one to manufacture for. And we got our stuff done faster. We were able to pivot and make our stuff better, improve it quicker. Our ceramic line came out. It was a major upgrade for our company.
Yeah.
But through the sale of the company, we went to the sale. The only way I got, thank you, Jesus, for this, is that we had all of the product necessary to make all the hand sanitizer you could possibly want. And we started giving away every third bottle. We'd sell two, we'd give away three. We had, you know, I don't know, hundreds and hundreds of thousands of bottles to give away because we had a train car of isopropyl alcohol to use. Just happened to have it. And that kept our numbers very floated. And then on social media, these people all start going, thank you so much, Adams Polishes. We gave this hospital, you know, 10 cases of sanitizer. We gave this, you know, this police department, fire department, first responders, we're just giving it to them. because we're selling so much of it because the demand was so hot. And it just kept our numbers across, right, steady. And we went across the finish line and sold the company. And then I, you know, just then my main role became dad. And, but my gosh, the struggles and all of the knuckle, you know, I just feel like I've put my knuckles across the cheese grater so many times to learn. Like I'm a hard-headed person. It takes me a lot to learn. I wish I could learn from other people's mistakes. I need to see the blood and feel the pain to learn as the way God built me. But, that process, but I will say this is that was 5 years ago that we sold the company. The excitement of building and growing that business in those early years, being up all night doing the coat trucks, developing those products, trying to improve the products, improving the system, getting the team going in those early days was so much more satisfying than running a big business. I loved that. And right now, you know, we bought a car wash in town here, Enzo's Hand Wash and Detail. So we're doing this again. I am so excited.
Do you feel it? You feel it all, the juice?
Totally.
You're back, huh?
I feel so good. And while my role as dad was very relevant, you know, I spent so much time with my kids. My oldest was 11. My youngest was, you know, like 4 or 5. Now my oldest is almost 17. And my youngest is almost 12. But that, what a wonderful blessing that I was able to spend so much time with them. But I sure miss this part. I miss building from scratch and growing. I'm humbled every single day with another major problem, major issues redoing concrete all the time, you know, we just put in a huge conveyor system and it needs to have a totally different kind of belt. We're getting ready to pull off a big chunk of this $400,000 belt and redo it all. It's brand new, but that's, boy, I feel alive. I love
it's great,
it.
Man.
It feels so good to be building something again.
Oh, that's, I know that juice. I know that mojo. And it's funny because like if someone told you all the problems you're going to run into and all the headache and the heartache and the friction, you would probably stop it right there and be like, ooh, I'm not up for that. But when you're in it and it's those formative days and there's no rules and it's hard, but you're right. There is nothing like that on the planet.
It's a drug.
Yeah.
It's a great drug.
It really is.
It's a great drug, man. Yeah. You know, I'm taking this one so different. I'm taking this one with God on the cover. Glory to God in every way.
Yeah.
You know, like, okay, now, before I was just like, oh, I'm just really a smart person. I'm really just a go-getter. I'm a hard worker. It's like, that's not how that went down. That went down, that in hindsight, God kicked a door open here, kicked another one open there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Gave an opportunity here.
Yeah.
Gave a relationship here. I mean, there's no way that stuff like that just happens. But when you try really hard and you decide to work really hard, more doors get kicked open. Yeah.
Well, I also know you, and you would never. You're a generous guy. You're a philanthropic guy, and that all ties into the whole, you know, the whole collective of your story and your journey. So. Listen, I want to thank you for today. Super fun. I love your story. I love your energy and your approach to life and your lens. And I certainly learned a ton from you today. So thank you for coming in. And, I wish you all the best with Enzo's. I'm sure it's going to be an amazing thing and a fun ride. And enjoy that mojo while it lasts, because as you know, it gets hard again.
This is it. This is the time.
Yeah.
You got to enjoy it. You know, the struggle. You know, knowing now, which is so, it's, don't you wish that when you started your business, you knew then that the struggle is what made it great?
Yeah.
The struggle is the juice that made the success story. It's like the struggle. If you have no struggle, your success story has no juice. Like you got to have struggle.
Yeah.
You got to get through these things. Every one of these hurdles creates integrity, grit.
Yeah.
You know, your capacity goes up every time that you jump over one more hurdle. And it's like, you don't want a hurdle-free life.
Yeah.
You know, it's supposed to suck a little bit. It's supposed to. That's how you move on to the next
level.
Right.
That's
you know?
Right. Yeah.
It's been great. You and I have very
Very similar parallel path.
Very similar.
Yeah.
So, So likewise, I'm honored to be here, and it's really for you to say, hey, Adam, I want to hear your deal. That's high water, man. Thank you.
Right on. Thank you for being here, dude.
Pleasure.